Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted Anderson Hotel. To many, the sleepy little town of Lawrenceburg, Kentucky may not seem like the ideal setting for a violent ghost story. To others, those who know it, it is the perfect setting for such an encounter. The Anderson Hotel, or to the locals, the haunted Anderson Hotel, is a relic of the past that won't seem to die, even though its doors have been shuttered, reopened, and then shuttered again due to the extreme supernatural activity. In the past years, paranormal investigators have documented violent activity, including aggressive bite marks and a haunted artifact that mystifies researchers. Today, we talk with paranormal investigator Daryl Marston about his experiences with dark and unexplained entities at the haunted Anderson Hotel.
Anderson Hotel kind of fell in my lap by accident when we did the investigation. We'd actually seen it on Paranormal Lockdown on their first season, and we knew Jeff. He was the actual guy who was doing the caretaking and running the paranormal stuff, Jeff Waldrop, out of the building. And so we hit him up and said, "Hey, can we come down?" And he said, "Yeah, no problem." So we came on. Next thing I know, we're in a car driving to Kentucky, and I've never been to Kentucky before at that particular time. So we got there, and when you first see the Anderson Hotel, it's just on a strip. It's only two stories high. It's not a really big building. It's an historical building. It probably dates back to the early 1800s. But it, over the years, it became a kind of a sleazy hotel, motel, I should say, actually, but it's called the Anderson Hotel, where people were actually staying there and living there on, you know, low budget, people with problems, with drug problems. There was all kinds of stuff going on in the building at the time, all the way up to the late 80s when it actually closed down. So, yeah, it kind of started there. I don't know a whole lot about the actual history. I could tell you about a lot of the things that happened in the building as far as the paranormal activity and people passing away in the building, which the ones we know of. So, I mean, I can take you from there.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about some of the things that have gone on in the building that people have passed away when it was an active hotel or home in some cases towards the end of its active life.
Yeah, it was a low. Basically, what it came was a low income like motel hotel type thing where you pay week to week to stay there. Probably, I don't know, anywhere from $75 to $100 a week, and you live there. You had your own room. You had to share bathrooms. Most of the bathrooms were in the hallways. So you can imagine, you know, maybe 20 people sharing two or three bathrooms. So they had a landlord that actually stayed there, somebody who managed the building. And from what I hear, one of the last guys who actually ran the building was a real ball breaker. He was a real jerk, real nasty guy who took advantage of the tenants of the building. He basically walked around with a nightstick type ordeal, and he would, you know, bang on the doors and threaten them and all kinds of stuff. I could tell you about the one teenage girl that they don't really have her name. That at the time I was there, there was no name to her. She did commit suicide in this one room, and the actual mattress that she committed suicide is still in that room, with the blood stains and everything on it. So it's really surreal when you walk into this building, because what happened was it got closed down in the late 80s. They shut it down, they boarded it up, and it stayed closed up until I think it was 2015, 2016, they opened it back up.
As an active hotel?
No, it's not an active hotel anymore.
No, but
it was up to the late 80s, like 89, I believe it closed, 88 or 89.
I guess my question is, when they opened it back up in 2015, you mean did they just take the boards off the building to go check it out, or did they actually open it as a business of some sort?
Oh no! The upstairs was still closed off. Downstairs they turned into like a deli type bakery where you can actually go in there and eat, sit down. It was a really nice little setup they had going on. But the upstairs was still the original hotel. So when they opened it up, I mean, there was stuff in there that was still there from the 1980s. The beds are still in the building. The furniture is still in the building. It was really surreal walking in there because it was been closed up for 30 some odd years. And you still have this bloodstained mattress sitting in the bed on the bed frame in this one room with the bloodstains where you could see where she apparently either cut her wrist or did something to that nature and she bled out. It's very creepy. There's bloodstains in some of the bathtubs still that you can see. They actually apparently came in there with Luminol and actually tested them to make sure they were blood, and they were blood. So they put some research behind it before they actually went out there and said, hey, this is blood, guys. No, they actually did some research, had some professional come in, test it, and it is blood, and they are the original artifacts to the building. They're still there.
Wow. Was there a reason why all that stuff just kind of got sealed up when they shut the hotel down? I mean, sometimes there's nothing more than the reason to it of just, you know, we're shutting down. We're not going to make money on this. I'm not going to invest my time or money in cleaning any of this up. And we're boarding it up. Or was there something more to sealing this place off as almost a time capsule?
I think it was more of a county or a state issue that came in. They saw the living conditions of the place. They shut them down. The owners, you know, may have went bankrupt. They may have just walked away from the building. And then this other lady came in and purchased the building to turn it into this deli restaurant type situation downstairs. So what she did is, I guess, she decided to open the top part up, and she had Jeff Waldrop come in and start doing the paranormal investigations because he runs the paranormal tours there. Mm-hmm. Jeff Waldrop from the Nick Groff tours, everybody knows who he is. That's who was running it. So it ran for about a year or so, and it's closed down now. I think too much stuff was going on there. It's a very active building. We actually talked to the people downstairs, some of the people who work in the deli restaurant, and they have actually seen apparitions downstairs just walk right across the room. So it's a very active area.
How far into the opening of the deli when this building gets unboarded and essentially the crypt is opened, did it take for them to start having some sort of activity going on with their restaurant?
Well, I think at the time we were there, the restaurant had been open for about 2 years, and they were getting pretty much from the get-go, from the day they opened. I mean, everybody in there has had some kind of paranormal experience from what we understand. And then when they opened the time capsule upstairs up, it just ramped up. There's some very dark energy in the upstairs part of that building, especially on the one side. It's kind of sectioned off into two sections. When you go up there, when you first walk up this really huge staircase, to the left-hand side, it's dark, don't get me wrong, but the right-hand side of the building is very dark. You feel it as soon as you walk into that hallway. It's just like, it's overwhelmingly, it's just a negative energy there.
When you think about the building and when the haunted activity first, I guess, started getting reported, that would be my question, is when was the first thought process of this, or the first reports of this building having something paranormal going on with it? Obviously, it had been boarded up for so long, then it got opened up into something. Did it start being reported once the bakery went in, or were there reports prior to that?
Well, yeah, there was reports. It was more of a folklore type thing around the town, that the building was haunted, and, you know, everybody kind of knew about it. I mean, it's funny because when we were there, the two times that we went and actually investigated the building, just standing out front of the building, you have people walking by like, oh, you guys are doing a paranormal investigation. You're here to see the ghost, aren't you? Like these are just regular town folk walking around. Like, yeah, watch out for those ghosts in that building. It's weird. But they're like, yeah, okay, all right. So they all know about it. And plus, it was on paranormal lockdown the first season. So it hit TV and it really blew up, and a lot of people started, you know, really recognizing the building. It's a shame they had to shut it down. I think that the owner really didn't want that kind of publicity anymore because it was getting too much, you know, for them to even deal with. But the paranormal activity there has been known for quite a while, being such a dark location, and everybody knew the stories of people dying at the Anderson, and the murders, the suicide. There's quite a few suicides there as well. There was some witch black like black magic, witchcraft, satanic type stuff going on in the building at one point as well, we found out. There's still some artifacts from that still there that they kept. I can explain that a little bit more. Basically, the old landlord or the manager of the building was at some point practicing some kind of black magic. It's something to lure in like a dark spirit, more like a dark witch type thing. Not so much satanic, I shouldn't say, but more of to lure in a dark spirit. And what it was is we found, we didn't find them, but I guess Jeff had found them at some point in the building, these scrolls, like these old scrolls where he'd actually taken wood and scribed in this, all this like satanic witchcraft, like spells and stuff to raise evil spirits. And they were still in the building. I think they found them in a closet originally. So they think a lot of that dark energy came from that, and plus with all the negative things going on in the building.
It would just be a battery for negativity. Just so I understand correctly, you said it shut up now. Does that mean the bakery is gone too? The building is just sitting vacant as a whole, or just the upstairs is not being touched?
Just the upstairs, from what I understand. I have not been back there in 2 years. They actually closed. I think we were probably one of the last investigations in the building.
Okay.
We went twice over like a 3-month period. Because the first time I went, I had too many questions that weren't answered, and I had to go back a second time because so much stuff had happened to me in the building the first time there, and I was just kind of lured back to it. The second time we went there wasn't quite as intense. We had some really good moments, don't get me wrong. We get called a lot of really great EVPs, had a lot of activity, but the first time was very dark. And the strange thing is, we were walking through the building with Jeff. He was giving us a tour of the building, and, you know, when we first got there, and he's like, he said, I've not felt this energy in the building since Nick and Katrina were here. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, something's going to happen tonight. It's you can feel the energy in the building, and you honestly could feel this weird, strange static electricity in the building, especially on the one side of the building. It was very, very intense. Like, everybody was kind of like on pins and needles.
Take us back to the very beginning of your first investigation there, the first moments you walked through the door. How did it feel? How did it start? And walk us through the evening.
Okay, so we got there. We got there a little bit early, so no one was there to let us in. So we actually went to the downstairs, ate some, you know, lunch and stuff. And then, you know, we started asking questions to the people who were working downstairs, you know. And they gave us they really didn't say too much about what was going on upstairs, but they said that they told us what, you know, they've seen. You know, one person had seen an apparition walk from one side of the room to the other. People, you know, they've had like pots and pans and plates fall off the shelves for no reason. Just weird stuff happening. So we're like, okay, cool. That's good. That's good to know. So then, you know, Jeff shows up. He lets us in the building. We go up, and literally in the first 10 minutes of walking around this building, I got this. I've never been in there before. I've seen it on TV, but TV doesn't, you know, really give you the gist of it all. So, I mean, it's a lot bigger than people think it is. So we're walking around the building, and I just wander off away from everybody. Like, I knew where I was. Like, something was basically puppeting me and pulling me through the building. And it was like, I was just, and I could hear people talking. Come to find out, they come looking for me. I'm in a bathroom, standing in front of a mirror, just staring at the mirror talking. And it was so weird. And Jeff's like, you got to get him out of the building and shake it off him. So they pulled me out of the building, and it's just like this, I had this like massive energy just leave my body when I was like so worn out after that, like so tired, like something had just taken all my energy from me. And he's like, see, this is what I'm talking about. Something's going to happen in this building tonight.
Do you have any recollection when that was going on of standing there talking in the mirror, or almost was it like a daydream where suddenly you pop out of it and it's like, boom, what happened?
Yeah, it's exactly how you just explained it. I mean, it was like I could hear people talking, and I could physically know where I was, but I had no control over it. Like, I knew I was standing in this dark bathroom, staring in a mirror for no reason at all, talking to something that wasn't there. And then I could hear them probably, you know, 100 feet away from me down this hallway looking for me, like going in and out of every room, calling my name. And I didn't answer them until they found me. And it was just so real. When they got me out of the building, I had more control of myself. I was just very drained of energy. I was like, man, that's weird. He said, yeah, that's weird. He said, I've seen that before in this building. He said, we've seen people get scratched, and there's also people getting bit in the building. I was like, what do you mean getting bit? He's like, well, they get bite marks. Like, the one investigator that investigates with him actually got a bite mark on the back of his calf, and it looks like teeth. He shows a picture of it. It looks like a full row of human teeth on the back of his calf. We're like, nothing, no way. I was like, yes. So I'll get to that too, because we had something like that happen later in the night. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we investigated, we're doing the investigation, everything's going good, we're getting a lot of really cool stuff, you know, with the REM pods and this and that, and some EVPs. So it kind of dies down around 1-ish or 2-ish in the morning. So we're like, well, let's go over and let's do an EchoVox session in this one part of the building that we felt, you know, was the darkest part. So we get over there, and if anybody's ever used an EchoVox, they know it's very echoey, and it speaks when it's just like SB11 or SB7. You get like bursts of language. You know, you might get one full word and another word, but it doesn't really like talk like we're talking right now. But so we get over there, the EchoVox is doing its thing. Yeah, and we're talking to it, and all of a sudden the EchoVox starts counting backwards. It's going 4, 3, 2, 1. 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're like, what is that? And then we start hearing the Lord's Prayer. This is honest God truth. The four of us that were investigating this building start hearing the Lord's Prayer backwards. Well, no, I'm sorry, not backwards. The counting was backwards. The Lord's Prayer was like just chanting of the Lord's Prayer. Mm-hmm. And we're like, are we hearing the Lord's Prayer right now? I'm like, yes, we're hearing the Lord's Prayer on the EchoVox, like somebody's saying it. It's not possible. You can't. It's physically not possible to do an EchoVox. So we don't know what we were getting. And then that's when all hell broke loose. The guy who was filming, the one investigator who was with us, Keith, he actually felt something smack him on the back of his neck. And he turned around, I could see, I was like, dude, are you all right? He said, yeah, I'm fine. Something just hit me. I was like, you sure? He said, I'm sure you didn't run into something. He said, no, something just smacked me on the back of my neck. Look at my neck. And it did look like somebody's handprints across the back of his neck. I said, okay, so, and all of a sudden he said, oh man, and it looked down, he got the same bite marks on the back of his leg that the other investigator got. It looked like teeth going across the back of his leg, like 3 or 4 teeth on the top and 3 or 4 teeth on the bottom. And it was amazing to see it. It freaked him out. He was pretty shook up. Yeah, he was pretty shook up. So, the one girl, him, they're both shook up. So I said, go ahead and get Stephanie out of the room, Keith. Take her out of the room, go back to the main base and start getting stuff together. And let's get out of here because things are getting really out of hand. So the other girl sitting in the corner, I look over with the flashlight and she's rocking back and forth in this rocking chair. I'm like, what are you doing? Let's go. And I'm starting to get angry at this point. And she's just got this weird smirk on her face. I'm like, stop messing around. And here's the thing is, Tony, they in the building at the time, like we had to have people there in the room at the very front of the hotel, and there was 3 or 4 guys in there, other investigators who were running the actual building, and they're on static cam watching everything that's going on and videotaping it. They weren't with us, but we just knew they were there all night. They didn't bother us, we didn't hear them or see them, we just knew they were there. So they're watching us on static camera. So I bring a chair and I set it in front of her. I said, look, we got to go. I don't know what's wrong with you, but we got to get out of this building because everybody's getting freaked out right now. And I kept hearing something out of my left, on my left side. And there was a doorway there in this bedroom. And I kept looking to the left-hand side like there's something there. And then I talk to her and all of a sudden she looks over there. And I kind of look over and I hear something run toward me. And I turn real quick. And the next thing I know, I'm laying on the floor. Now, I was sitting in a chair. And next thing I know, I'm laying on the floor. The chair is totally smashed to pieces. I don't know what happened. It was like a burst of energy just came right at me. I don't know if it was me lunging back or this burst of energy that may push me back. But all I know is when I came to, I was laying on the floor on my back, and it was dark in the room. And I hear them saying, "What was that?" I guess they heard me fall. So they come running into the room, and next thing I know, they're like, "Hey, get up. What's going on?" And the guys in the camera room came out and said, "You guys have to go now. Something bad is happening in this building. You got to get out." So that's the last thing I remember. So I remember taking my crew to this main room and us packing our stuff up. Now there's this big light there, and it's like a work light, halogen light that's set to a stand, and that's the only lighting that was in the actual room for us to go by. So we're trying to pack up all our stuff, getting it all, and the two investigators walk downstairs. They take out to the car. I'm in there by myself with the other girl, who's just sitting in the corner. Oh, now I don't know what was going on with her. I'm trying to get packed up so we can get out of there. And she, next thing she says to me was, "You want to see me blow out a light?" I'm like, "What do you mean blow out a light?" And all of a sudden, the light behind me, the halogen bulb, exploded. I nearly cried. I was in the pitch black. All I know is I ran to the doorway and opened the door so I could have light, some light. And by that time, the other investigators were coming out and said, "We're out of here." I said, "I don't know what's going on." So we got everybody out of the building, and that was my first story to Anderson. I was done. I said, I'm out of here. I don't know what that was. I don't know what possessed you to say what you said and that bulb just blow out, but it happened. I swear to you as I'm standing here talking to you, it happened.
Yeah. At that point, I mean, obviously this is getting pretty intense and pretty dark. What's going through your mind? Is there ever the moment of maybe we should leave, or is it more like, let's keep going?
No, we were done.
Okay.
Even the investigators who were in the other room, who were running the actual building, they're like, "You guys have to go."
Okay.
He said, they're like, "You got to go. There's something amping up in here. We haven't seen this in a long time, and somebody's going to get hurt." And they left right after us. They walked right out the door after us and locked the door and drove off into the night. You know, this is about 3-4 o'clock in the morning. So yeah, we're in the middle of Kentucky, and all I wanted to do was get the hell home. I still had like a 10-hour, 11-hour drive ahead of me, and all I wanted to do, I didn't care. I was so amped up at that point, and basically couldn't believe what happened. I mean, I drove straight through the night and got back, you know, to the East Coast, and I was just like, and I finally, you know, decompressed and like, it kind of took it all in. I was shocked by what happened. I didn't believe it. You know, it's just like, it was just too much to even believe it was, and that's why I had to go back for the second time.
Yeah. So you decide to go back for the second time. Actually, before I get to that question, let me ask you, you know, they were telling you, the people who are running this, you know, "We got to get out of here. It's amping up. They're basing this and basing that opinion, I'm assuming, on some sort of experience that they had there where it did get amped up, and they were there to see it or experience just how bad it could get. Did they ever explain to you or share any of that with you as to what, of just how bad it has gotten?
No, this is what happened. We try to make contact with them for about a 2-week period just to get the videotape. Mm-hmm. Like, because they were videotaping too on a static cam, and we wanted the video to see what actually happened, what knocked me out of the chair, what was, you know, because I mean, this is over like a maybe an 8 to 10 minute period all this was happening. So they would never contact us back. We contacted Jeff Waldreth and like, "Hey man, can you get the video for us?" Because they weren't with him either. And he's like, "I'll try to get it for you." And he had no success either. So I said, "Well, can we come back?" He said, "Yeah." So we went back again, probably about 2.5 months later, just to see, try to find out what happened. And we took a different bunch of people with us this time. Yeah, 3 different investigators, just to see if it was something with one of those investigators besides myself. Mm-hmm. So, the second experience there was nowhere near as dark as the first. We did get a lot of really great EVPs. There were some moments there where the REM pods were going off and we were asking a lot of crazy questions. We tried to do a seance in the one room. They allowed us to do that. Really didn't get a whole lot out of it. So it took on a whole different energy the second time we were there. The first time was amazing, and second time was amazing too, but nothing like the first.
Yeah. That certainly sounds like it. Let's start talking about that second experience that you had there and what went on within the walls of the Anderson.
Okay, well, the second one, what we did was we set up with a team out of England who actually are on, they're on my show now, the American Ghost Hunter show, Alex and Helena. They're Bowling Paranormal at the time. And what they did was we did a live feed with them from the Anderson. They had a show. It was a podcast. So we did this podcast with them live from it for probably about an hour and a half, 2 hours, where we did, they were asking questions while we were running the SB11, the Echo Box, and all kinds of stuff. They were hearing stuff that we weren't hearing, which was strange, on their show. They were hearing people talking that wasn't us. They were getting responses through I think they were using a phone or we were on a computer, I can't remember. They were getting responses coming through that we weren't hearing. We were getting something different. They were getting something totally different than us. They were getting like a total almost conversation with an older gentleman that was kind of weird coming through. So we hear most of that during this whole thing. They played it back for us and like, hey, did you guys hear this? And like, no, we didn't hear any of that. We were there the whole time you were, but we didn't hear it. So what we were basically getting was a lot of Echo Box stuff, a lot of SB11, SB7, talking over it. We tried to recreate what happened the first time. We did get some moments where we did see some dark shadow play in the one hallway, in the one room that we had the experience before. We did see a shadow figure that three of us saw, this actual shadow figure, standing at the end of the hallway and dart into a room. And we actually thought it was a person in the building. That's how prevalent it was. And we ran down there, and it was probably only about 75, 80 feet away from us at the end of this hallway, and we got into this room, and there was nothing there. There's no human there. There's no way for them to get out of the building. It's on the second story. There's no windows open. Everything's boarded up. So, yeah, I mean, great experience. It was a top-notch investigation, just like the first one, but the first one just, it took us to a whole nother level of, this is real. This stuff, I mean, some of the stuff you see in the movies, like, this is what you're thinking.
Yeah.
People getting knocked out of chairs and people being able to do stuff like blow out light bulbs with, you know, by just saying it. You think it's movie, it's not always movie. It can really happen. And it really, like, as an investigator, it really opened my eyes to, like, hey, there's something more out there than just spirits. It's not just, you know, the humans who have passed away. There's some dark energy out there that may not be human. It's something else.
Let's start talking about the exactly that. What you think is in that building and what you think is haunting it. Obviously, having some time now to kind of look back on it, kind of reflect on the stories of the factual stories of who's been in that building, who's died in that building in various ways, shapes, and forms, and then the experiences that you had there. What does it come down to in that building? Are there multiple things going on? Some that were human, some that were not. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think of a lot of it. There's some residual energy there. There's some negative energy as far as this person who is doing this dark black magic type stuff, this, you know, almost satanic type stuff. I do think there is some intelligent spirits there. Some are good, some are bad. I think some are just trapped there. I think they've been trapped there since the day they died, and they, you know, with them reopening that building. I mean, could you imagine? I mean, just being locked away for 30 years and all of a sudden somebody just opening the door and just the energy you would have, you know, just to see light again. And that's what I think happened there. I think all this stuff was all this bad and good and this, you know, all this energy was just locked away for so long. And when they opened that building up, man, it was just like gangbusters. It didn't know what to do. And it had so much to feed off of. But it didn't have that before. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the energy of a human walking through the building, you know, with all their equipment and, you know, all these batteries and energy and stuff it could feed off of. It didn't have that. And now it's just like, whatever it is, it wants to stay there. It doesn't follow you home like when I was at the House of Wills, where it actually followed me back to my house. No, this energy, when you walk out that door, it's gone. It's like it doesn't want to leave. It knows that's its home. That's where it thrives. And it has no reason to follow you.
It just, and it doesn't want to follow you. It's at home there. It just doesn't want you there, which is interesting because because it almost seems like it's able to project itself more when there is people there and all that equipment that it can feed off of. But at the same time, it doesn't want anyone there. Could it just because it's at peace and it doesn't want to even be known?
Right. Believe me, I do think it likes when people are there because it gives it something to feed on.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't want to leave the building. It's like it's almost, I don't know if it's trapped there, like something's holding it back. Mm-hmm. Like once you get through those doorways, it's like crossing the line. Like, you know, it can't cross it. It's weird. It's something I've never felt before. Anderson is it's a gem, and it's a very mysterious place. I would love to go back there someday. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think they're going to open the doors back up, be honest with you. I think they had too much happen, too many negative things happen, and people were, I mean, from what I understand, people were getting hurt in the building. I seen it firsthand. I mean, I got put through a chair. I've heard other investigators getting hurt there too, you know, getting bit, getting scratched, getting, you know, almost possessed, you know, what I call puppeting, not so much possessed. Puppeting is basically where it takes over you. You still have, you know, functions, but you can break away from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the energy there is stuck there for some reason. I think it's been sealed there. Maybe somebody came in and sealed it so it can't leave. I think if it could leave, it would. I think it would try to follow you, but I don't think it can. I think it's not the D word. It's not a demon. I think it's just some really dark spirit that has a lot of strength. They could do a lot of things. And it did. It showed us that first investigation, what it can do.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Daryl Marston about the haunted Anderson Hotel. Could the spirits that haunt the Anderson Hotel just be sad or evil people that have passed and continue to torment the living? What are some of the best ways to communicate with the dead, according to Daryl? How accurate are some of the modern ghost hunting equipment that's used today when investigating haunts such as the Anderson? Is there anything to be afraid of when trying to have a conversation with the dead? And how does Daryl think we'll be communicating with ghosts in 20 years? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.